Baba Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopi Janavala Baba Girivara Dari. Yasoda Nandana Vajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari
Out of another key. Tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 31. So we will start with the invocation and move on from there. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, we're going to do the Sanskrit. Please repeat. Sarvabhutam sitam. Sorry. Sarvabhutam, is this a short meter or a long meter? Sarvabhutasitam yomam, bhajatye katvam astitaha. Sarvatavatamanopi Sayogi mai vartate Sarvabhutasitanyomam Bhajatye katvamastitaha Sarvata vartamanopi Sayogi mai vartate. To the audience. Sarvabhutasthitam yomam Vajatye katvamashtita Sarvata vartamanopi Sayogi mai vartate. We shall. Sarvabhutasitam yomam Bhajatye katmamashtita Sarvata vartamanopi Sayogi mai vartate. Okay. Word for word. Sarvabhutasitam. Situated in everyone's heart. Yaha, he who, mam, me, bhajati, serves in devotional service, ekatvam, in oneness, astitaha, situated, sarvata, in all respects, vartamanaha, being situated, api, in spite of, saha, he, yogi, the transcendentalist, Mayi, in me, Vartate, remains. Okay, so translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the Supersoul, knowing that I and the Supersoul are one, remains always in me in all circumstances. Purport. A yogi who is practicing meditation on the Supersoul sees within himself the plenary portion of Krishna as Vishnu, with four hands holding conch shell, wheel, club, and lotus flower. The yogi should know that Vishnu is not different from Krishna. Krishna is Krishna in this form of Supersoul is situated in everyone's heart. Furthermore, there is no difference between the innumerable Supersouls present in the innumerable hearts of living entities, nor is there a difference between a Krishna-conscious person, always engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, and a perfect yogi engaged in meditation on the Supersoul. The yogi in Krishna consciousness, even though he may be engaged in various activities while in material existence, remains always situated in Krishna. This is confirmed in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1-187 of Srila Rupa Goswami, Nikilas Vap Yavastat Vastasu Jivanukta Sauchete. A devotee of the Lord, always acting in Krishna consciousness, is automatically liberated. In the Narada Pancharatra, this is confirmed in this way. Dik Kalad Yanavach Chine Krishna Cheto Vidhayacha Tanmayo Bhavati Kshipram Jivo Brahmani Yojayet. By concentrating one's attention on the transcendental form of Krishna, who is all-pervading beyond time and space, one becomes absorbed in thinking of Krishna and then attains the happy state of transcendental association with Him. Krishna consciousness is the highest stage of trance in yoga practice. This very understanding that Krishna is present as Paramatma in everyone's heart makes a yogi faultless. The Vedas, Gopala Tapani Upanishad 1.21, confirm this inconceivable potency of the Lord as follows. Ekopi san ahudha yo bhavati. Although the Lord is one, He is present in innumerable hearts as many. Similarly, in the Smriti Shastra, it is said, Eka eva paro vishnuhu savravyapi nasanshayaha aishvaryad rupam ekancha suryavat bahudhe yate. Vishnu is one, and yet He is certainly all-pervading. By His inconceivable potency, in spite of His one form, He is present everywhere, as the sun appears in many places at once. I'll read the verse one more time. Such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the Supersoul, knowing that I and the Supersoul are one, remains always in me in all circumstances. So there are a few things coming up in this verse and the purport that Srila Prabhupada has noted here. We're talking about the Paramatma and we're talking about Bhagavan. So we know from this verse in the first canto that Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are all one entity and different aspects of this one entity. So this is talking about two, which we consider higher, two more revealed aspects of Krishna, of God, which is Paramatma and Bhagavan. Brahman is not essentially talked about in the text. And this concept of oneness is also comes up, ekatvam, in oneness. In the Vedanta Sutra, we'll be doing a lot of study of that in the Bhaktivedanta College. The concept of oneness is a very big deal in all Vedanta schools. which includes Shankaracharya and includes the prominent schools of Vaishnavism, which is the four main schools of Vaishnavism, Sri Vaishnavas, the Brahma Madhvas, the Nimbarka, and the Kumara Sampradaya, and the Rudra Sampradaya. But anyway, down the line, the Vedanta Sutra comes into play, and these schools are all Vedantic schools, and they have to interpret the Vedanta Sutra. And the associated Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita that go along with that. And there's a lot of texts in the Upanishads and a lot of sutras in the Vedanta Sutra which talk about oneness. And there are also many that talk about more than oneness. So Shankara is known for being a Dvaita, which means not dual. Means not, and Dvaita means dual. So he's saying oneness, he's just really focusing on oneness. Oneness of identity, oneness of eternality. It is, everything is just one, there's no attributes, there's no variety. And then the schools turn more, you know, you have Madhva, who's Dvaita, who's straight dualism, and you have Ramanuja, who's Vishishta Dvaita, which is non-dualism qualified by some more philosophy. And we have the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, who are from the Brahma Madhva lineage, technically. The philosophy is a little closer to perhaps Ramanuja, but very different altogether. We are Chintya Beda Beda Tattva. We know this word, we say this word, we throw it around, but this is talking about our oneness and our difference with the Lord, and how his different energies are also one and different from him. And we've just been talking about Jiva Goswami, who really propounded this philosophy of Chintya Beda Beda Tattva and the Shaktis in our classes. Here it's talking about Paramatma. It's just interesting because the last essay that I have to do for the term is about the two entities in the heart. And Baladeva Vibhushana, this is one sutra in the Vedanta Sutra that's talking about these two personalities. They go to the cave and they, thank you, and in the cave they drink nectar. And so I'm looking at Madhvacharya and I'm looking at Baladeva Vibhushana. Baladeva Vibhushana is a Gaudiya Vaishnava, and Madhva is a Madhvite. The principal Madhvite. He's the founder Acharya of Brahma Madhva Sampradaya. So I was expecting when I got to Madhva's commentary that he would say something like radically dualistic and saying, you know, there's two, and then establish why there's two and go on how to say there's two. But he really shocked me because he said these two are both Vishnu. And he was actually saying this verse, and this particular sutra had nothing to do with the jiva, because the jiva is in the heart. But then Vishnu, in the verse, somehow he describes why there's two. And then in the next verse, after you're like, wow, this is starting to sound like Shankaracharya, it's starting to sound like a Mayavadi. Then in the next sutra, he just propounds dualistic philosophy, like there's no tomorrow. Like in his commentary, he just like emphasizes distinctness. Like anything. And Baladeva Vibhushana's commentary was very simplistic. He just said, these two are Paramatma and Paramatma and Jiva. So, there are different opinions of the different Acharyas, and when Yudhishthira was at the lake of death, and Yamaraj, in the disguise of a Yaksha, asked him what the most confusing thing is, he actually said that the advanced Vaishnavas and the advanced yogis and all these great personalities, they don't always agree. And this can be very confusing. But honestly speaking, these major sampradayas of Vaishnavism all have a very fundamental conclusion, and that is bhakti, devotion to Krishna or Vishnu. So that's very important. And here in this verse, it's pointing that out, that actually the yogi who is meditating on the Paramatma within the heart, if he can understand that that Paramatma, that Super Soul, is Krishna, then he is as good as a devotee. I mean, why not? He is meditating on Krishna within the heart. That's bhakti. That's devotion. So, if he's able to understand that Paramatma is Bhagavan, then he is a devotee. He's as good as a devotee. His conclusion is the same. There is no real difference between from his conclusion. Perhaps maybe his process is slightly different to the, or more so, bhakti isn't so dependent on a process, and he's using some process. But he is, if he is in bhakti, then the process is insignificant, because essentially devotion, bhakti, is the essential principle, and that's basically what this verse is pointing out. He can be meditating on Paramatma, but if he's doing it understanding that Paramatma is Krishna, then his meditation is perfect. And Prabhupada is pointing out, actually, you go through all the stages of yoga, and you go through to samadhi, but your samadhi should be Krishna. He kind of touched it a little bit in his purport, but he will also say it in other parts. That's a really important thing, because you can start a yoga path, and you can get all the way to the end, to samadhi, but your samadhi has to be either meditation on Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan, really, or maybe you could argue for the Buddhists or the Jainism that perhaps you can meditate on nothing, but realistically you should meditate on something. Meditation, that's what it's about. You have to meditate on something. So that should be the sole purpose. And then that will discriminate where your perfection is. Because according to the Bhagavatam, like we were discussing in the first canto, there is this verse, I cannot remember the number, establishing that the Supreme is known as Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman. They're all essentially the same, but for us, Bhagavan is the original. Some people say it's like Radhika Ramanapur was telling us in our class, that some people get this idea that Brahman is there, and then if he adds his personal touch, then he becomes Paramatma, and then if he adds his features, he becomes Bhagavan. But this is not the case, definitely not in our philosophy. It's that you have Bhagavan, you have Krishna, and when he covers himself a little bit, then you have Paramatma. Excuse me. And then, because Paramatma is the same, but Paramatma does not come with all his associates and his abode. He just comes, and there's some aspect of personalism because he's in your heart and you're communicating with him, but there's not all this variety of pastimes and different things. And Brahman, he doesn't interact. There's no real interaction. Our philosophy is when you merge into Brahman, you get Sat. You get eternality. From Sat Chit Ananda, you get Sat, in which you are eternal. And there is a type of bliss, a type of Ananda, but it's not the Ananda that we refer to, Sat Chit Ananda. This is just bliss. Like, if you were to, you know, get some endorphins or some kind of injected chemical, which is to make you happy, it's just like this, it's a stream. There is no relationship, there's no variety, it's just a stream of bliss. But Paramatma then is allowing some communication. You realize that this force within you is controlling this universe and deciding your every movement and your every decision with you, and is constantly alongside you. So you get this feeling of, then there is two. But then also you realize that he's also connected to everything. So you have like a oneness and connection, because you have this connection with something that is connected to everything. But with Bhagavan, there is personal relationship. As I think Ramanuja likes to say, it's like for him, Brahman is like the light, and the light reveals your nature. It's not that you merge into the light. You come to the light, and then it shines upon you, and then you see yourself. Whereas Shankara is more like, you know, you just merge into this light. So he's saying that the association with God reveals who you are. And this is quite obvious, because our constitutional position is to be a servant of God for our tradition, and this is revealed when you're in association with Krishna. I mean, you can't be in the association with Krishna unless you have this mentality. It doesn't work. You know, that's why we have this fantastic material world, so we can express ourselves otherwise. So, ultimately, the Supreme is revealing our nature. Our nature is, our Sanatan Dharma is service. I mentioned that Brahman is Sat, so Paramatma is then Sat, Chit. And Chit is knowledge, so it's eternality and knowledge. So the stage of Paramatma realization is these two things. And Bhagavan realization, that is the Ananda. You have Sat Chit Ananda. There is where you get that nectar that everyone often misplaces in some dreamy concept of Brahman. That variety, that Leela, is like churning the nectar. This Leela, sometimes Leela, some people translate it as conflict. Like when you rub your hands together, you have some, you know, when you rub your hands together, you get some heat. So Leela is like the play that it churns out the taste. Because I don't know if anyone's familiar with grinding spices or things, but when you grind some things, then the flavor, it emanates from this thing, the scent comes out, it explodes out of it. So if you're just associating with Brahman on its own, with no Leela, then it's just, you don't get the full satisfaction. You really need to come to the stage of personalism. Which also the scriptures do not just say that. I mean, when I say Sat Chit Ananda, it's not just that Brahman has Sat and that Paramatma has Sat Chit and that Bhagavan has Sat Chit Ananda. We have these intrinsically in ourselves. So we experience them in these different levels of realization when we're in association of the Supreme in these different revelations, but we are Sat Chit Ananda. So in association of Bhagavan, we experience our real self. We experience only a segment of that perfection when we're in association with Paramatma and Bhagavan and Brahman. But in Bhagavan, we experience the full capacity of what we are as a being. We experience everything that we're made to be or maintaining ourselves to be. And of course, in this material world, we don't really experience any of it. We are asat. I don't know, is achit a word? And ananda. We're not eternal, we're dying. And everything we have breaks. And, we're really lacking knowledge. When you decide to learn, when you go to school, and especially, you know, our school, you start to learn, you really do not know anything. Socrates was saying that in the end, you realize you just don't know anything. And, where's the bliss? Why are so many people frustrated? We're making our advanced civilization, but we're still miserable. And what was the point of all this advancement in the first place? It was supposed to make us more happy. Get off the field, stop, you know, hacking at the soil and get into our lovely lounges and have all the machinery do it. But in the end, we're working harder and we're still miserable. And in fact, we were less miserable before. So our endeavor to make ourselves less miserable is making us more miserable. And this is the nature of this world. So it's like complete, it's like the banyan tree reflected. It's a complete opposite of what we're supposed to experience in our eternal nature. And an interesting thing that the Acharyas, even Shankara, tries to use it to justify our merging into Brahman, but Ramanujacharya points it out in relation to Paramatma. He says that actually we all feel that oneness inside, that we all feel that Atman, they say, that with a big capital A, that supreme inside of us. It's not something that you have to get technical and you know, draw a chart up and write down and figure out. We just feel it intuitively. We have this intuitive feeling of some oneness within and some link. And we're always searching for this. You know, everyone's trying to create this world peace and unity and all these different movements to try to bring us together. And, you know, we find it also in religion. Everyone's kind of trying to get closer and closer to something because we have that inside. What Shankar will forget when he points that out is actually we also have this idea of individuality that we cannot pull out from out of us. We also don't just want to be like everyone. Part of it, obviously, in the external sense, is our rebellion from the Supreme, and, you know, but ultimately we have that freedom. So we have these two seemingly conflicting attributes that make up our beautiful reality. And you really need them. I mean, you need connection, you need love. You know, Madhva, who's the massive jewelist I put on this slide, he's still saying that, like, there is oneness in of residence and oneness of purpose of the Supreme and the Jivas. There is still someone. So he is a person whose philosophy is called duality, literally in the term of it, in the translation of it. And he is still saying there is some oneness of purpose and oneness of. But you know, obviously, we have to be careful because Shankara's doctrine is there. We have to know what our oneness is, and we have to know what our diversity is. Because even Madhva's is not exactly how we would interpret it. Jiva Goswami does a really great job of using all the commentaries of all the Acharyas, including Shankara, at least to some part of the Vedanta Sutra, to justify our philosophy and its perfection. And it's an amazing elaboration. And he draws all these teachings from Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and the rest of the six Goswamis, and ultimately Lord Chaitanya. And our philosophy is that Lord Chaitanya is God. That's still something I find, like, when you're going around and you try to tell everyone, you know, well, the God in my tradition appeared 500 years ago. When did your God appear? You know, like, if you try, like, it's really hard to conceive of the fact that perhaps God was on this planet even 500 years ago. 5,000 years ago, you can kind of put in a distance, well, that's so long ago. But ultimately, when you actually read Chaitanya Charitam, read it when you read the biography of Lord Chaitanya, in a sincere way, you have to have faith in it. I mean, if you want to really get if you want to learn anything from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I suppose you have to have that essential faith. And he really does. I mean, we really have a good way of showing who is God and who is not God, because there are so many people claiming to be God these days. A few of them have died off, but there are still plenty more to fill their shoes. And Prabhupada said, you know, you pull it out, you get your Bhagavad Gita, and you find that lovely picture. Does this one have it? The universal form. And you show this to someone, you go, can you show me your universal form? If they're on enough drugs, they'll probably say yes. But this is the point. The point is, they have to have the symptoms of the Supreme. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita is a very elaborate biography of any kind of saint that we have. If you were to find any ancient saint or any medieval saint or anything like that, Lord Chaitanya really has a massive biography. You can't really find a big biography of any other leading chai or any other leading saint in any other major religion. They don't have something like the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's like, you know, no one, how fortunate are we to have Lilamrita, like this massive biography of Srila Prabhupada, six volumes or three volumes, depending which version you get. I think now they even put into two, but nonetheless, it's enormous. And so detailed. And then you have Hosori's one, and then you have this one and that one. We have so much about our founder, Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, and a lot more than we have of Lord Chaitanya, but nonetheless, 500 years has passed, and we still have a massive book with elaborate commentaries and an extension of supporting texts that reveal Lord Chaitanya's life and how he was. And when academics see this, they're not denying all the things that happened, perhaps some of the supernatural things, but they're perhaps sometimes saying Lord Chaitanya was epileptic or something, but they're admitting that this person at least existed. So at least the person we call God existed. And it seems by the amount of references to Krishna in all these texts that perhaps he also existed. Yeah, I mean, and obviously if you have faith in tradition and you read it and you kind of parallel the philosophy, I mean, you get Bhagavad Gita and you read through that and there's so many things going on. Oh, there's way too many things going on. And you have to read it again and again and again. But you read it again and again and again and all these thousands of different philosophical concepts are going this way and that way, all start to come together. Really, really expertly. Krishna wasn't just talking like me. He wasn't just rambling on and on and on to Arjuna because he wanted to entertain himself. He is actually really imparting some serious knowledge, really systematically. He's very... People... You don't get it when you first read the Bhagavad Gita because it just goes way over your head, but people who study it, they say actually he was a very systematic and intelligent teacher. He had an introduction to the lesson, he went through all the exercises, and then he had a conclusion, and he even told you, you know, some of the peps of what you get out of it, you know, afterwards. He didn't even just leave with just giving knowledge. He told the benefits of it at the end as well. This is a great teaching method. And what he taught is fundamentally amazing. I mean, just, I get stuck, when I give a class, I'm usually skipping off whatever I'm talking about. I always come to the first three instructions, which you find from 2.12 to 2.14. I learned these when I was like 4 or 5 years old. They drummed them into us. We were all lined up in like the military and we all learned these verses. My life would be so totally different if I didn't have these verses from the beginning. Like, from this, and maybe not force too many other verses into people. No, we were well looked after in my generation. But, these change your whole look on life, actually. You're looking at it, you know, before this you're thinking, I'm in this life and I'm gonna die and I have to try to enjoy this world. This is what I have to do. And if that doesn't work out, you freak out. You just get crazy. Why is it not working for me? Why is everyone getting in my way? I'm going to die if I don't, I'm going to die and then if I don't, and you don't even want to think of death because then you think, well, what is the value of all this? And there's this complete confusion. But straight away he's, and who am I? And like, where do I belong and what am I? Am I chemicals? He says, no, you know, never was there a time when I didn't exist, nor you, nor all these kings. Okay, you're individual, you're eternal. And then this body is temporary, and it gets old, it dies, good luck. If you're smart enough, you realize that you're going to go into a new body, and you're not going to worry about it. And guess what? Happiness and distress, they come, they go, that's it, deal with it. That's a real colloquial way of giving those verses out. He says, you have to tolerate them. You have to tolerate happiness and distress coming and going. They're like the seasons, they just go on. So we've already kind of kicked out any worry about this universe, and then that's all your Sankhya philosophy, that's all your gyan, and then boom, we go through, he keeps elaborating it just in case you're not convinced, and talks about every single facet of what that may be, and then he gets into the bhakti section smack bang in the middle, and you realize actually, it's not just that this world is crazy, there's actually something worth living for, there's actually something that thing that I'm dying to find in myself, that even that bliss, you know, we're all chasing for some enjoyment. That enjoyment is actually somewhere. We just have to kind of wake up to ourselves and realize we're not the supreme control and supreme enjoyer. But that joy that we're so hankering after and digging under every rock for is there. And this verse is pointing it out. Actually, these yogis or anyone, these bhaktas, whichever they may be, they understand that this is Krishna and that the purpose is Krishna, then that's it. That's all they need. Any questions, comments, chastisements? Remy, Prabhu.
Just nice explanation about Chaitanya, but it's about many things and
yeah.
And for me, the best Prabhupada books.
Kanamakana Swami often quotes Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, if the world is ending and it's flooding and you just grab onto the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that's all you need. And if it's too much, then let go of the Bhagavad Gita. If that's too much, then Bhagavatam, just hold on to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because with that you can reestablish everything. And it's true, because, I mean, ultimately it contains so many verses from the Bhagavatam and the Srimad, the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, but it is such a text that it's, and when Prabhupada gets a hold of it, oh my God, you get to that, if you get to the you just start it and you're like, yes, I'm just coming to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and you open up the first book and you're just like, this Prabhupada is this long. But it's not just, again, it's not just him just talking for sense gratification. It's like amazing information. And if you can absorb it, it's going to change your life. But anyway, it's one of those big balls of sweets that you have to take. You know, when you have that feast and you just can't see the end of it, it's one of those ones. After some time, it seems a little bit frustrating, but it's well worth it. Anything else? Anyone?
Glorifying the CC, I just recently heard someone talk about time which you have to translate it.
Yeah.
18 months. Not just that, at that time he was traveling constantly.
Yeah.
Not just that, but he was doing a lot of energy of work. So he did phenomenal.
And he was 70.
And then he gave the instruction to have it published in 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they were doing, they were publishing one book every 4 months.
Yeah. And he just pushed. It's Prabhupada. Yeah, I mean, he was getting up at 1 a.m. in the morning and writing books, you know, dictating books. And he's, you know, his body was falling to bits, and he just kept going. It's actually when you read, when we did this Chaitanya Charitamrita retreat with the Kadamba Kanana Swami, he was talking about Krishna and Das Kaviraj, and actually he was doing virtually the same thing as Prabhupada. The way Prabhupada wrote Bhagavatam, and all his books, he was doing the same thing. He was barely sleeping, he was really old, he could barely see what he was writing. I mean, I don't even know if he could see what he was writing. I don't even know how he did it. His eyes were fading, and he wrote it. And it's an amazing work. There's some other thing I wanted to say. I lost it. Anyway, something about Prabhupada and Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's almost there. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, I realize that it's like you have a devotee in this intensity. This, you know, we consider Srila Prabhupada and Krishnadas Kaviraj pure devotees. Phenomenal examples of pure devotees. And we say just an 11th of a second or 11th, just a moment, association with a devotee can change your whole life. And when you see a guru and they're like struggling, like a real disciple doesn't want to see any struggle for their guru. They want to do everything they can. And they've put all this blood, sweat and tears and they've given it to us. And we just like, so much in bio. But it's like right there, and it's just there just to chew up and take, and this is like, if you can, for me, I realize that theoretically, but like I just know that if you can meditate on that one point fully, that's your liberation. If you can become grateful enough for what we've been given, because that's another way we interpret bhakti is gratitude. If you can be grateful enough, then you'll surely be perfect. Grantaraj Srim Bhagavad Gita Ki.